Who are you looking for?
Bruce Maddox.
I found him.
We must extract him. Are you serious, sending us down there looking like this?
We really need to sell this. We need to show a little panache.
You're killing it.
Something's not right.
An ambush.
Transfer complete.
Hello and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton putting a feather in his cap.
And we're here this week to talk about the latest Picard episode, Stardust, City Rag, the halfway point of Picard Episode 5.
Cam, this is our first episode away from the Borg cube,
right.
And it gave us the best Borg material yet, far and away.
Well, was that hard?
Well, it was no slipping and sliding through the hallways of a Borg cube at this point.
Yeah.
But I have to admit, I was not missing Narek or the interest that he has in when Sochi.
No.
I'm fine to actually spend some time with Seven of Nine.
Tyler, is it a good thing when you're totally okay with not checking in with your antagonist?
Oh dear.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, actually, no, I wanted to check in with Rizzo.
Sure. Yeah. 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 Okay. Yeah. Rizzo.
But, you know, let's cut to the chase, though. We finally get our long awaited Seven sequence, you know, and yet again, for the fifth time in a row, there is a flashback of some sort. This must just be what their thing is for all the teasers. So I'm fascinated by this. We find Seven of Nine, was it 13 years ago or 16 years ago?
It was 13 years ago.
13 years ago. So it's right after the synth attack, the explosion of the Romulus star system. And Icheb's dead, Cam.
Yes, he is.
And it's not even from the same actor from Voyager, which, that must be like a dagger through the heart for one, Manu Itariami.
Yeah, he's now played by Casey King, very briefly, who was the star of Two-Headed Shark Attack, a movie I have watched.
Well, Two-Headed Shark Attack definitely sounds like a holodeck program that one Barkley would be playing. So.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, but let's get into this. There's a moment there where he asks Seven to take his life. You know, like he's just been tortured in a very Saw-esque sort of manner.
Yes.
A little disturbing to see already with the F-bombs. I don't think this is family programming.
No, I wasn't going to say Saw. It's more like Hostel.
Okay.
There's a sequence in the first Hostel almost exactly like this. And I was like, as I was watching this moment of him having his eye ripped out, I thought, who is this show for?
Is it for people that loved watching Next Generation with their families like back in the day?
No.
No, I
would never show this to my children.
And the other thing is, like, there are moments similar to this, just the violence that we saw on, say, Discovery as well.
Yeah.
And I know what their mandate is, like, oh, we want to make, you know, premium cable television.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay.
This ain't your daddy's Star Trek.
Yeah, but it's just like, the thing is like, who enjoys seeing this sort of stuff? Like, I honestly wondered that. Like, I'm thinking about the decapitated baby head in Discovery Season 2. I'm thinking about pulling eyes from their sockets in this one. And it's for characters that are very much beloved within the community. Like, you're kind of torturing, you know, a character like Icheb in this instance.
Right. And I mean, the thing is, you say, you know, who wants to watch us? Maybe in a different movie or a different show, like, I would not be opposed to it. I tend to watch, you know, a lot of horror movies that are gory. That's fine. There's a certain type of story that I'm willing to accept this a lot better than one that is following an established character I've watched in hundreds of hours of programming. And now I'm watching Icheb, a character who, look, we've ridiculed Icheb a lot on this podcast over the years, right? This is not really how I want to see this character treated.
It's not really what you signed up for as a viewer.
No.
You know, so I don't think he was dispatched with very well, but what they're trying to do is give motivation to Seven of Nine, inform her journey, and inform to the viewers why she isn't quite the same Seven as we remember her. Like, I think it's tough for us to believe if she's going to be motivated solely by vengeance unless it's something like this. And I totally believe the moment where she says that Icheb was the closest thing that she ever had to kin. Like, that is something.
What about the other Borg children?
She did get rid of them.
Conveniently forgotten, yeah.
No, but they were all left behind in the Delta Quadrant. They were. So, whereas, like, I can believe that she spent years mentoring him, saw his way into Starfleet Academy. That rang true. Mm-hmm. I did step back a little bit when she squeezed him and said, and called him my child.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure if I bought that because. What was her age difference, like a 15-year-old versus like a 25-year-old when they first met? You know,
sure, it was more it was more of a, siblings.
That's what I would like, or like an aunt.
Okay, you but know? A cool aunt.
A cool aunt, you know, your young, hip, cool aunt.
That's right.
Or a second cousin.
Right.
Yeah. Let's go with second cousin.
Those really cool second cousins we all have.
I have many.
Do you? I don't even know if I know who my second cousins are.
I'm pretty sure all of my second cousins think that I'm the cool one. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah, obviously. There. So it is informing us with our journey with Seven. And it's also just interesting. Like I said, like this is the most interesting Borg stuff we've had after, you know, four episodes in the cube, and because it's giving more kind of the individual journey. We didn't really dig into that with Hugh when he was appearing a couple episodes back, and I wish we got more of that.
We didn't really get anything with Hugh. I mean, you can't even say they didn't give us more. It's like they didn't really give us anything. They didn't even really acknowledge who the character was in that moment.
Yeah.
So it was like, okay, I mean, I'm going to assume he's coming back at some point, and we'll probably get... you know, a bit of a dialogue exchange that does explore the depths of that character and his backstory, but we haven't gotten it yet. So, and I feel like most of the time in Picard so far, the Borg stuff is more of set dressing. We're not really delving into Borg mythology in any real way. It's just kind of there to remind us of who the Borg were, sort of how they tie into this universe and what the other characters want from them.
Whereas I like the idea of this world building that we spoke of last week where, you know, is not a former drone a hot commodity on the black market? Like, and also think about the fact that since she was assimilated as a child, she's going to have like way more of these parts, you know, flowing through her system versus a Locutus who... He was a drone for like a week or two, and it looked like he just had like a little chip on his head by the end of Best of Both Worlds Part 2.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Are you surprised that Picard and Seven, they'd never actually met before despite their shared heritage as former drones?
It does... Well, you know, the Star Trek universe is very expansive, but because of the shows we follow, it feels kind of small because there's only so many crews that we follow, right? So you go like, well, of course Picard would probably have run into the crew of Voyager, but... Maybe not. I mean, he obviously hadn't.
He knew Janeway.
That's true. He did know Janeway.
And they knew who each other were.
Yes.
You know, and as Rios said, what were his exact phrasing? It was the ex-Borg Fenris Ranger from the Delta Quadrant. You know? So but she has a reputation that precedes her.
Yeah. Plus, we don't really know how long Seven stuck around in any avenue that Picard would be wandering through.
Well, didn't we have an episode a couple years ago where we're wondering what maybe the Voyager crew was up to after they got home from Earth? And we're wondering, you know, is a career in Starfleet what Seven of Nine has in store for her? And I think we kind of went back and forth on whether that made sense for the character journey. I think I ultimately said, like, yeah, I can picture her joining Starfleet, but I don't think that was the case.
Yeah, that was in our Unsolved Mysteries episode. I'll post a link to that in the show notes. But yeah, we really did go back and forth, and there was a lot of them were like, yep, makes sense, continuing down the Starfleet road. But with her, we did really go back and forth, and I don't know that we ever landed on an answer that satisfied us.
Yeah.
It was more like we could go like, yeah, that's fine. But it's not like we came up with an exciting alternate history that could really add to the character.
Well, one history that I do appreciate, though, is it's very clear that she did break up with Chakotay, thankfully. So she was instead pursuing that relationship with the season one Troy lookalike.
Yeah, no kidding. Was that supposed to be a season one Troy lookalike? Because it sure looked like one.
Frakes was directing. I don't know. How is anybody on set and not commenting on how much it looks exactly like Marina Sirtis circa season one?
I have no idea.
Yeah.
It's very bizarre. Picard is becoming a show where every episode people put on silly costumes. And this is the third week in a row. And it's just like, what is going on? Like, I feel like some of it's intentional and some of it isn't.
I think the pimp regalia
that's intentional.
Rios is donning in this. That's got to be intentional.
Oh, of course, yeah.
What did you make of one Patrick Stewart's performance when he was going in character as this broker here?
Well, it was swinging for the fences at something.
It felt very much like Patrick Stewart's like, hey, guys, I've got an idea, versus Picard is thinking, this is how I go incognito.
Yeah, I mean, I was reminded a little bit, for example, of the episode Gambit, where he's also playing kind of a broad character, but that felt more grounded in some sort of reality. This actually reminded me a little bit of almost like his Ahab in Moby Dick.
I was even thinking about, remember his performance in Jeffrey as well?
I haven't seen Jeffrey.
Okay, but yeah. It was more of that flamboyance that was on showcase here, and I think that's more of a Patrick Stewart using his executive producer credit to kind of steer the direction of that.
Well, I think Patrick Stewart enjoys doing things that feel a little bit outside the norm for Picard, yeah. As we saw in the movies he had a little more say in. And yeah, I agree. That definitely felt like he was pushing the envelope on this one. And
it took me out of the moment. I have to say, we talked with our guest last week, Barry Link, about whether we bought Picard on that Vashti planet. He seemed to be a bit of a different self, and I did buy it. Mm-hmm. I thought it was totally believable that could be the Picard that's he's just been growing over the years. This moment here, I just it didn't really seem like Picard to me. You know, it was just like he's being, flamboyant for the sake of it, you know.
Well, it was just going like pure camp, but I feel like it was supposed to be, I think, funnier than it was. Like, I didn't find it that funny.
I don't think you and I got any laughs out of it, though.
No.
Yeah.
And I think that was kind of iffy on this episode across the board, but
across the Borg?
Across the Borg. Actually, the Borg stuff, as you said, I actually kind of liked. But
yeah.
A lot of this to me felt like they were trying to do something silly, but also having these weird tonal mishmashes. Like, you can't open an episode with each head being dissected violently on screen and then expect me to be like, he's got a feather in his hat.
I know.
So funny, that Rios.
Yeah, and it's like you said, those tonal shifts that seem to be, it gave it more of a schizophrenic vibe throughout this episode. And I mean, there's stuff that I was interested in, but I realized when Raffi was having that discussion with her son, we have not spent enough time with Raffi to make me feel as if that scene was earned. You know, the pathos on display there was something that I'd been yearning to see. And, you know, I think the actors were fine, but it was not a moment that I had been invested in at all.
Well, and you get the sense that Picard's ship is like the ship of the damned, these broken souls who are coming together on this ship. And I think they gave us enough of Raffi being this damaged person when she came onto the ship. And this felt like adding extra material to that character. But I agree 100%. Like, I don't know this character well enough. We've only really spent, was it one full episode or two with her? I know she shows up near the end of one episode. Is it one full episode we've done with her?
Well, this is episode 5.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we've had, I think, 2 or 3 full episodes with her at this point.
Yeah.
So.
But it's still like, and that kind of...
She showed up the end of episode 2.
Okay, so we've had 3 and 4.
Yeah.
And then this one, yeah. It just, I don't know, and that kind of goes hand in hand to me with one of the issues of this whole episode, which is, this is a landing mission episode where all the characters are going down, they're all going undercover, and it's a wacky kind of, scheme they're pulling. I don't know these characters as a unit at all. Like, if you have these characters go on some missions together, you know, a few in a row, like, you look at TNG, you know, the first few they go on aren't these, silly missions. You get a sense of, I understand how these characters perform.
Naked Now is not a silly mission.
That was a serious mission, yeah, Tyler, and how dare you snicker at that. But, you know, you get a sense of who these characters are and how they work together. I don't really have any sense of how these characters work together yet. And now I'm being launched into their first big mission altogether, and it's a goofy one where they all put on silly costumes?
Well, the other problem is, and I think it goes back to our problem with the Mirror Universe arc in season 1 of Discovery, though, is that you have not spent enough time with these characters for you to then be introduced to, these wacky alter egos for it to have as much meaning to you versus when you're watching them on Deep Space Nine after, 2-3 seasons.
Yeah.
When you have these characters going, I need to be in disguise, let's play it up for laughs, yuck, 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 and it's just like I said with the Raffi sequence, it just didn't feel earned at this point, especially as you say, you don't know how they usually bounce off each other in terms of chemistries because they haven't really been with each other for any extended period of time.
They've been on a ship together, but we've never,
for one episode.
Yeah, and the last episode was Picard going down to that Romulan like village by himself. He wasn't with like the group of them.
Yeah.
So we didn't get to see them, you know, one being the point man and kind of playing off each other. We just saw Picard on his own.
Yeah.
So it was a very weird choice. Yeah, and the other thing I was sort of just going to add, just tying off of last week too, you know, obviously we had Elnor introduced last week. And I felt like a lot of the supposed comedy of this episode was that Elnor is clueless and can't play in character. Well, can't he? I don't know. I haven't spent enough time with this character to realize that he's like a guy that would give them away.
He did make me laugh twice, though, just with his very aw shucks sort of almost like a hillbilly being dropped into the big city
sure.
sort of thing. Like, but beyond that, like you're right. Like, are we to believe that he's not capable of going undercover? Like, I don't know, because we didn't actually see a showcase of him kind of screwing things up. In fact, I don't know, he actually was a bit of a boss when he disarmed everybody and started taking weapons. So
he appeared hyper-capable.
Yeah. So I don't know what the point is of them trying to imply that he's not capable.
You know, I go back to Star Trek IV, where a lot of the joke of that movie is that Spock can't lie as a Vulcan. And the reason all of that works so like brilliantly is we've spent time with Spock. And look, I'm not asking that we spend like 30 years... with this character, with Elnor, before we do something like this. But we knew the Spock character so well that we understood the humor of the situation and why this character was in some ways a ticking time bomb, so that when other characters approached Spock, we as an audience were like, uh-oh, like we know how this could go wrong. In this situation, I have no idea how Elnor reacts in an undercover situation.
Yeah, and I do want to correct you on one thing, though. You described this as the ship of the damned, but if this is a Voyager-centric, you know, shout-out, obviously we're talking about the barge of the damned.
Oh, of course. It'll be a barge once B'Elanna joins.
Yeah. So, wait, Stovakor is the good afterlife. Where does a barge go to? I forget. It's like some other Vokor kind of name, like Tovokor. I don't know.
That actually kind of sounds right.
Okay. It's been a while since I've seen... Barge
of the Damned.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's been a while for me too.
Wasn't that an Aaliyah movie?
Queen of the Damned.
Queen of the Damned. There you go. There, Borg Queen of the Damned. Yeah. So going towards the stuff that maybe worked a little bit more for me, even though I wasn't 100% on board, the Seven stuff. Like it's not fun to see a character that you admire so much just want to have like kind of a bloodlust out and just want to murder people in cold blood. The thing is, they do set it up for Seven to come back later on in the season. And I think we kind of know, oh, she learns a lesson about how life is sacred. And she's not like, I don't think Seven's going to be satisfied by killing off Bojazel. Is that?
Bojazel.
Bojazel. I thought they're talking like
Bojazel. Yeah.
Bojazel. Okay. Yeah. If the kids are listening, plug your ears. But Cam, I kept thinking of Vajazzle. Like,
oh yeah, I actually did too. Okay. I also thought of Bedazzle.
Bedazzle.
So yeah, one or the other. Like, it sounds like a comedy name.
Yeah,
and it's not a funny character.
No, not really. Unless you thought that the whole Troy lookalike thing was supposed to be hilarious.
Was intentional,
I don't think it was.
So, yeah, yeah. I have no idea. I mean, let's go back to the Seven. Let's get back to, we'll go back to Stardust later, because I think there's actually some stuff to talk about in terms of the world building of Stardust. But with Seven, what did you think of this idea of her being this ranger, like a vigilante type?
Well, you know, I was wondering about this, you know, is this what we've been waiting for like 18, 19 years? And then there was that moment where she said that the neutral zone collapsed. And she felt as if the only thing that she could do is bring some semblance of order. She's had enough practice doing that. And I said, yeah, you know, I believe that. Like, that seems like realistic to me versus like a career in Starfleet where, let's be honest, she probably would have found her own version of a Maddox that just wanted to dissect her and just study her in like a lab. And that's just not the life for her, I think, that we discovered over 4 years in Voyager.
Well, yeah, because when you see her even on Voyager, even in season seven, she's often sticking out like a sore thumb. She doesn't really follow the Starfleet path. Like, she doesn't seem like someone who's geared for that, and that she has maybe some other path I thought would be a little more, I don't know, exciting.
Yeah. Oh, well, so then what are your thoughts about her hooking up with the Fenris Rangers?
I mean, I can totally buy it from a character standpoint, because she is an outcast. She would be an outcast at home and would be on probably any other Starfleet ship. So it totally makes sense that she would join this group of vigilantes who are probably also, to a certain degree, outcasts themselves. We obviously haven't delved into the Rangers. We don't know enough about them yet, but I can totally buy that. It makes sense to me. It's kind of that outlaw life.
So do you think then maybe she had spent some time on that lost Cube along with Hugh. Do you think that there's a backstory with her and Hugh that maybe will be uncovered a little bit more as the season progresses?
It seems like you have to have those two together at some point, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, Jonathan DeLarco and Jeri Ryan are, like, very close friends, so I have to believe that maybe they would have, you know, liked to have done a scene together. Maybe that happens.
Well, I'm thinking more just kind of the mythology of Star Trek. Do you think it's realistic that she would have spent time already on that Borg cube and would have already interacted with Hugh so that there could be a backstory between them, unlike there was between Picard and Seven?
I would have to imagine so, because I just think Seven's a very intelligent character, and I think she would get home and she would be struggling, and I think she would be driven to maybe pursue characters who have a similar background. I mean, that kind of goes back to why she never met Picard, which seems like a pretty primary case that she could talk to. But I think Hugh would make a lot of sense.
Yeah. And you know, I was kind of maybe groaning that she had not hooked up with Picard before. Mm-hmm. But there was a moment that I think they were saving, though, because they had the discussion about what it means to be human. And yeah. She was like, do you ever feel as if you struggle to regain your humanity? He said, I'm working on it all the time, and you need to do that. And she agreed. Like, they had a moment there, which I thought was very important, where I think if you lose every semblance of individuality, that is going to be something that you struggle with no matter how long, especially if you're in the collective from age, what, like 6 to like 28? You know? Like, that's a tough thing to do.
It really is. And I really enjoyed that scene of her and Picard talking about that. And I really wanted more of it. Like, to me, that was really what was working for me dramatically in this episode. And just from the character, you know, character basis, what was making these characters interesting to me, it's that, not like a scheme.
Yeah.
I was kind of disappointed, really, with, you know, we had such an amazing entrance of Seven of Nine last week. And you're like, what could happen? And, you know, I got a little bit of something, but I did not find it satisfying.
And the thing I was thinking about, though, it's like, how do you convince Jeri Ryan to come back and do this? You have to give her a lot to do, which, and that's kind of the other thing that I was thinking about, is like, I almost thought like Seven of Nine was in it too much to the expense of the actual like main characters. Like, think
especially
about,
this early.
Yeah. You know, so it's felt more like she should be in the main cast versus, okay, so one of the things that they complained about in early seasons of TNG is that, you know, you'd have episodes and the focus would be on the guest star of the week.
Right.
Whereas, like, the focus really should be on your main characters and kind of the internal conflict that they're dealing with, whether it's amongst each other or their own personal turmoil. This seemed like a Seven of Nine episode. You know, this is, you know, Picard's definitely been getting his episodes. I think the one who's been best served so far in the run of the series after Picard has to be Seven of Nine, just in terms of pure screen time in a 45-minute block.
Yeah, no, that's very true. Yeah, I would say maybe of the Picard cast, I would say probably Raffi.
I would say Soshi or Daj.
Okay,
like
I just feel I know so little about their inner lives because everything's veiled behind secrecy.
I know, and we're getting back into that problem about whether the central mystery of the season is one worth uncovering and whether it's intriguing. Like, I think we struggled a little bit with the Red Angel stuff because they seem to be stretching out about 6 episodes of mystery over the course of 14 episodes.
Yeah.
And this one, didn't I already kind of like give my theory like in episode 1 where like this conspiracy, it all has to do with Romulans just wanting to axe like all, you know, artificial life?
And, yeah.
We're getting more and more hints about, like, yeah, there's just this synth attack was just a conspiracy perpetrated by the Tal Shiar or some sort of Romulan element in conjunction with some Starfleet elements as well. And it's like, if we've already figured it out and it took us one episode to do so, much smarter people have already figured much more of it out than you and I have. And
right.
It just makes it kind of a frustrating thing to sit through, very much like when we were looking at the whole Ash Tyler thing, and we had already long figured out that it was Voke underneath all of that, and we're like, okay, so we're just kind of stretching this out. And that's why doing like ongoing mysteries for, you know, shows that drop week to week, I just don't think TV should be doing that nowadays. It just doesn't work for, you know, current viewing.
You watch a lot more TV than I do. Can you think of any shows that do like prolonged mysteries that have worked?
Oh, the one that I'm watching right now, though, is HBO's Outsider.
Okay.
There's a mystery element. The thing is, I don't have any like theories on how it's all going to end, mostly because I think they focus so much more on kind of the character stuff that I'm not preoccupied with the mystery that's going on here. Whereas I feel as if the show's a little bit preoccupied with whatever mysterious elements, whether it's the Borg cube or the android stuff or the synth conspiracy. That's not what draws me into Star Trek, you know,
right.
Kind of the heavy-handed, you know, storytelling maneuvers. It's more of like the character journeys. And it's disappointing when I see like those moments with Raffi where it just doesn't feel earned to me, where, mm-hmm. If you had spent more time with her, developing her, showcasing some of her faults a little bit more other than she likes to vape illicit drugs, you know, it's kind of like, I don't know.
Yeah, no kidding. I will say this about the Picard mystery. I think that having this whole mystery tied to the Romulans and the synths, it's at least founded in like mythology of Star Trek that at the very least has given you and I something to talk about on the podcast, or our friends to kind of, you know, debate back and forth on our WhatsApp group, versus a Red Angel where it's like, Tyler, what do you think the Red Angel is? I don't really know what it could be.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, there's a conversation.
I know.
And then we go through another episode of where's the Red Angel? What could the Red Angel be? And it's like we have no foundation to even delve into that. Whereas at least here, there's something.
Yeah. I agree.
I can't say that I'm really that riveted by what they keep teasing week to week on Picard yet, but at least we have theories. At least we can explore what the information we're being given.
But, Cam, what if somebody's never seen Star Trek before?
Yeah.
And you've got a lot of these scenes where, like, do you work for the Tal Shiar?
Right.
And it's just, I think a lot of people would be like, what is going on? Like, a lot of people would be like, oh, wait, I'm sure the Fenris Rangers are a big part of Star Trek lore, where this is only the second episode they've ever even been name dropped. So mm-hmm. I think this could be kind of confusing for newbies, which, you know, like, look. This is going towards the hardcore fan base. I get it. That's mm-hmm. fine with me. But I just wonder if they need to get away from a lot of the kind of exposition and too much focus on plot versus character. That's my main concern. And I'm bringing this up now because we are at the halfway point of the season.
Yeah.
And let's talk about this. Does this seem like a halfway point for a season? Like we're halfway done our adventure of season one of Picard?
Not really. Because, well, I mean... Okay, I'm going to first be positive and say, like, what has it done that feels like, you know, is working to its favor? I think it's established its mystery, and I think it's brought its characters together to then proceed to an end point. But I don't think it's done it yet in a way that has grabbed me. It's more like I can go, well, on paper, these things line up. Whereas when we were talking about some of the rockier sections, say, of Season 1 Discovery, we couldn't even do that. There was elements that just weren't working at all. In this show, I feel like everything's kind of functional, but there's like, as you said, way too much reliance on outside knowledge, I think, to give it value. I think someone who's tuning in now who does not watch Star Trek, they maybe know, well, this Bruce Maddox character must be important, they keep mentioning. But there's no context to it. There's nothing that they can bring to it that we get out of it going, okay, I can understand why this character would add to this story. So it does feel kind of like, very almost like rudimentary fan writing where it's like it's giving the fans what they want. It doesn't feel too fan wanky where we're just rolling our eyes at it, but it also doesn't feel like it's congealed into something that's like delicious. It's like, yep, it's a soup that will keep me going till next week, but or till the next meal, but I don't know.
Sure. It's more of a plain tomato soup rather than a chunky chicken noodle.
Sure, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So that said, okay, the Bruce Maddox stuff. I think this is definitely very important to talk about because Agnes is apparently into eating cookies out of his mouth.
Was so weird.
I would never take a big bite out of something and start chewing it and start kissing my partner. That would be kind of gross to me.
I think the greatest twist Picard has pulled is that this character, Agnes, is a love interest of Bruce Maddox, because I never saw that coming.
Well, only a 30-year age difference between those, which is fine, you know?
Sure.
May, December, all good. But, like, did I find it believable, especially knowing that Bruce Maddox would have been, what, 30, 35 when she was born?
Yeah. You know,
back when Measure of a Man aired, mm-hmm. she would have been in preschool, I think, which is like, okay.
Yeah.
So... that all said, I think the reason that they're putting this relationship in a more romantic thing is they're trying to show why Agnes is so profoundly freaked out about the possibility of this whole, I'm guessing it's this destroyer sort of thing that they keep alluding to, because I think she knows maybe the secret of Soji and Dodge that in the way that viewers don't know yet.
Right.
So if she's willing to kill off her own lover, which I don't know. I'm just saying, I would never date Agnes Girardi after watching this episode. I think Alison Pill is lovely, but sure. That character, no.
Yeah, although I feel like there's probably a lot of people that still would.
Okay, fair enough, yeah.
Different strokes for different folks, I suppose.
Yeah, but look, I bought her torment having to do that. Yeah.
Sure.
But I thought the whole Bruce Maddox thing, it seemed a little bit underwhelming when we actually found him, like, slurping out of a giant fishbowl of booze, you know, yeah, like on
Tranya.
What is Tranya?
That's the drink that Baylock was drinking in the famous episode Corbinite Maneuver.
Hell yeah. Okay. So and the other thing is, like, you and I were debating whether or not it was the same actor, and I initially thought it was. I thought they looked enough alike, but then when the credits rolled, I was looking for the actor's name, and I was like, I don't see it anywhere. Am I missing it? That, like, was he given special guest star status, and I just missed it next to Jeri Ryan's name?
Mm-hmm.
No. So they recast that actor as well, which, I don't, did it call for, okay, maybe I'll wonder this. If we're debating the age difference between this current Maddox actor and one Alison Pill, I wonder if maybe the other actor who originally played him, Brian Brophy, who is actually about 10 years older than the new Maddox actor,
mm-hmm.
I wonder if that was just a bridge too far for believability in terms of those May-December romances.
Possibly, yeah. Yeah. I think that would probably make sense. It does make me kind of question, and maybe this is heresy to say, but, you know, they're recast Maddox. And a lot of the season has been talking about Maddox. Did it have to be Maddox? Like, obviously, as fans, we know who this character is, so there's some value because we go, oh, of course, Measure of a Man from Season 2 TNG. But, like, was that necessary?
Well, I would say that knowing the role that he plays in this and his role in kind of the lore of Star Trek, I think a lot of fans would be complaining, like, why did you have to create a whole new character? Why could it not have just been Maddox?
So, and I guess you can totally make the argument in your defense, too, like, that, hey, they, you know, switched out, Antonia instead of Edith Keeler in Star Trek Generations for Kirk's love interest. Yeah. And why? You know, so maybe this is fine. I just wondered if, like, you wonder how much...
Tell me what you're getting at, though, because I have no problem with this being Maddox, but you seem unhappy that this was Maddox.
No, unhappy is not the word. It's more just going through the thought experiment. Like, did it add value making it so specifically this character from a Season 2 TNG episode that only the most diehard Star Trek fans really get any value out of? That's more what I'm wondering.
Okay. I mean... But
to
what,
me, it
what,
worked as well as if it hadn't been. That's the thing. I don't know that I got more out of it being this character than a new character.
Well, I just thought that with them building it up so much, and you hear the name Maddox for 4 episodes in a row until you see him, I thought there would be a little bit more fanfare for his arrival, or he would play a bigger part rather than just... Like, what was his role in this episode other than to be a captured guy that Seven has to pull a caper on...
Right.
So that they can fetch him, and then he, what is he, I don't remember, like, the exposition that he gives at the end about, you know, like, oh yes, I did it, you, Soong, and we created positronic life, or whatever. Like,
right, yeah.
That's what he delivered, and, I guess what he ultimately said is, Sochi's on the Borg cube.
Yeah, and that he wanted to, like, discover the lies behind the lies, or something along those lines.
Because
he's
speaking about the ban on synthetic life forms.
Right.
So, yeah, so I guess that's what he ultimately added. But here's the problem. We, the viewers, already know all this.
Mm-hmm.
So all he's doing is informing the characters, and I think it's a difficult thing to pull off for storytellers if the viewers are way ahead of the characters that we're following.
Mm-hmm.
It just, it makes it frustrating for viewers because it makes the main character seem kind of dumb.
Right.
You know? So, I don't know. This one I'm feeling less mixed on this one than episode 2. I'm higher up on this one than episode 2, but this is definitely towards the bottom of my list of Star Trek Picard episodes so far this season.
Right.
And I wonder how, Cam, maybe this one, when we do it a binge mode kind of watch, this one will probably just fly right by. Or mm-hmm. when we know where the season's going ultimately by episode 10 and we do a rewatch, we'll think, oh, this is a very important episode for establishing kind of the table setting sort of stuff that needs to go on.
But doesn't this feel so similar to the way Discovery did the we've got to find Spock, we've got to find Spock? Only in that case, it paid off.
Yeah.
In this case, we got five episodes. Where's Maddox? Where's Maddox? And then we get him very briefly, and in this case, there's no payoff.
Yeah.
At least short term. It doesn't seem like there will be much in terms of the character at least being alive.
So what I can hope for, though, look, I think they smartly took a break from the Borg cube in this episode.
Why, Tyler? There was so much more to mine from that rich relationship.
Yeah, instead of sock feet, they're finally doing inline skates down the hallways there. That'd actually pull a Harley Quinn action sequence.
Ooh, I'd be down for that.
That'd be okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Get the John Wick guys to do it. Yeah.
Yeah. So I hope episode 6, I don't know, get us back, get Picard over to the Borg cube. I think there's a lot you can mine there. When was the last time Picard's been on a Borg cube?
Right.
You know, him having a discussion with Hugh. The last time they spoke was 30 years ago in Descent Part 2. I think there's a lot for them to mine there as well. I think the sooner Picard gets to this Borg cube, the more that the storyline is going to take off here.
Do you have confidence that they're going to give you that type of material between him and Hugh? Just going off these first five.
I think they have to. You know, because that's the they gave us the moment between him and Seven that I was getting worried that we would not get.
Sure.
And they ultimately do give it to us by the end of the episode. And I think they know what a great scene it would be for Picard and Hugh to kind of catch up. And Hugh can say, well, this is... it's been a tough road for a lot of these former Borg drones. You've benefited far more than others have. And just look back at what Seven of Nine is still going through and how Icheb was ambushed and stripped for his own parts in a very gruesome fashion.
Do you think they run into any sort of trouble, though, when you're depicting Hugh and actually having scenes with Picard? And that, again, Hugh means something to all of us who, you know, watch Star Trek regularly and listen to Star Trek podcasts and what have you. But he means nothing to the average viewer. So how much of this is just going to be kind of reiterating why this character is important?
And by average viewer, what do you mean by that?
I mean someone that didn't really watch TNG much or has no memory of those episodes. You know what I mean? Like they watched it when it was on the air back in the day. And since then, you know, they're excited to see, oh, Patrick Stewart's back on TV.
I don't know how many of those people actually exist, though. I think it's an incredibly small amount of the viewing audience that would not recall who Hugh is if they're going so far as to subscribe to a streaming service to watch a 78-year-old starring vehicle for Patrick Stewart in Star Trek Picard. Like, so I'm not concerned about this. And I think the smartest thing you can do in storytelling is, like, don't make a story for other people. Make a story for yourself. And what I do get the sense of, though, is, like, these writers are telling kind of the story that they want to tell. I just think that by episode 5, it's coming to a head for us where some of our frustrations with some of the other elements that we could look past in the previous episodes, we're getting a little bit more frustrated now because I think there's a little bit of wheel spinning going on here, you know? Yeah. And I think we did bring that up in episode 4 with regards to the whole Borg cube boringness as well. So that's why I say, like, it's time for them to just kind of get into gear. You're at the halfway point of the season. You only have, isn't it weird to think you only have 5 episodes left to really get towards the thrust of the story?
It is, because when you go and look at, say, Discovery Season 1, 5 episodes in, we were watching Lethe, and I would not have said, Discovery is off and running after that episode, but that wasn't the halfway point for them.
No.
They had like 14 or 15 episodes in Season 1.
That's like the one-third of the way point,
yeah,
which so is a very different thing.
It is, and so they still had plenty of time to build up their momentum. Whereas I feel like Picard, now we're just getting to slowly edging towards the endgame, not to be confused with the Voyager endgame or Avengers endgame. But yeah, the endgame of where the story's going.
There was also an X-Files episode called Endgame.
There was also a Highlander film called Endgame. Yeah. But yeah, like I would have liked to have spent more time with these characters just kind of bonding, which is not afforded in this like rushing episode to episode, tying this all up in 10 episode sort of, you know, format they're going with.
Yeah, and it's something that, look, we enjoyed the pace in those Earthbound episodes in which it's a lot of him hanging out with the vineyard with those awesome Romulan helpers that we all really liked.
Yeah.
And look, the moments where he and 7 or 9 are throwing back, like, bourbon, you know, like, those are kinds of things that I like a lot more than the plot point sort of things. Like, yeah. Just let us breathe with the characters. That's what we've been waiting for a long time when it comes to people like Picard or Seven of Nine. It's just like, let's take some time and let them talk and let them figure out how they may have different motivations and how they can come to a similar understanding. I think Seven of Nine is very smart, knowing that Picard's not going to allow her to just, like, murder everyone inside of a bar, so she has to go and do it kind of behind his back, you know? And
totally.
She also says it's good that someone has hope out there, and that one is Picard right now. I think that's actually a very important message that I think the writers are trying to give us at this very moment.
Yeah, and I do appreciate that the pace of the show doesn't feel really very choppy at all. Like Discovery, those pretty a lot of episodes of season one and into season two, we were complaining about how the editing was really kind of messy and kind of robbing the show of those moments of just letting things breathe.
Well, the thing is, like, we didn't know what was going on a lot of the time, just because as soon as you started to figure out what was going on one scene, you would jump to another scene. Yeah. And then you'd have to pay attention to what was going on. That I swear to God, I'm not one of those people that usually struggle with, like, what's going on in TV episodes that I'm watching. You know, Discovery is more as a struggle for me, though.
Yeah, oh, totally. But I'm not having those problems with Picard. Like, to me, no, the Picard problems are kind of different.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, other than episode two of Picard, which was kind of a mess of just kind of cramming information together and editing it together, I think, a little quickly. But very different type of problem that was going on, at least earlier in Discovery.
All right. Who do you think gets a flashback in the next episode, Cam?
Ooh, okay.
I called it last week because I thought the obvious flashback would be Seven of Nine. I think it's pretty well established that everybody gets, like, well, every episode's going to at least kick off with a flashback teaser at this point. Who do you think makes the most sense?
Okay, two are bouncing in my head. Which one do I say?
You can go either or. I'm curious, okay, if you have two.
Okay, well, one is a Hugh flashback because, again, Picard has done a pretty good job showing instead of telling. So I think it would be interesting to flashback to Hugh. Give the viewer some information on that character. But I don't know if he was going to show up next week. So I do wonder, the flip one that I was thinking of is an Agnes flashback that gives us a little more basis for where that character is going and, you know, how she has arrived where she is now.
I think you just want an excuse to see more Bruce Maddox. Yeah.
The great romance of Star Trek.
It's up there with Lita and Bashir.
Have we really gotten a good romance on Star Trek in these new seasons?
I think not since Dax and Worf. I think that was the last great one that we...
Yeah. I mean, I would say the Pike-Vina one they did in season two of Discovery was pretty well handled.
Yeah, I agree.
But it was also just like kind of a one-episode thing.
This is my own personal preference, but like romance storylines between characters, I've never been a shipper.
Mm-hmm.
I usually shrug my shoulders at that. Not to say I'm not into like... romantic story. You and I, we went and saw Portrait of a Lady on Fire last week, which that's a romance movie there.
Right.
It was an exceptionally well done one.
Yeah.
And so I think if it's an exceptionally well done romance, I'm all for it. But a lot of the stuff just seems to be like, well, we don't know what to do with a character. Let's create a romantic entanglement in order to stir up some drama somehow or make people feel conflicted in different ways. But the Narek Soshi stuff,
yeah.
I don't know. We kind of see it being telegraphed from a long ways away of like what it means. It's like he's falling in love, so he's going to have a decision to make whether he goes with his heart or he goes against his sister,
right?
His family, his bloodline's there. Oh, by the way, before I forget, I predict Narek is going to get the flashback in the next episode.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Because we had a bit of a break for him.
Yeah.
There's not really a flashback you can do with Soshi or Daj at this point.
Right.
Unless, you know, we see Maddox turning the lights on. literally, you know how Beverly Crusher knew where Data's off switch was?
Well, he told her, right?
Yeah. So that had been established before. So I'm guessing like we get a similar like on switch moment with those two. But honestly, at the very end of episode one, Narek was explaining how he had that brother that died. He's obviously somebody that's been infected, years ago when he was a younger man by the refugee crisis going on with the Romulans. I think there's probably like a fun flashback that we get with that particular character.
That's a good actually idea. Yeah. So we'll see if either of us are right. But what did you think? We finally arrived at Free Cloud. This is, you know, the second big world we're getting to see, alien world. on Picard. What did you think?
I kept waiting for Juggalo Joe from as played by Jude Law in AI artificial intelligence to pop up any second.
Okay. AI was where your mind went, huh?
Yeah, were you thinking Blade Runner?
Definitely Blade Runner 2049 when it had like the giant holographic woman dancer.
Yeah.
But it also reminded me a lot of Ready Player One when they were inside the bar or the big club there. And it just reminded me so much of that like big dance scene in Ready Player One.
Yeah. Okay. I can buy that. Yeah. It would have been awesome to see Patrick Stewart doing the anti-grav dance sequence there.
Would have loved it.
Yeah. Did you notice? Okay. So as they approach Stardust City on Free Cloud, they had all those advertisements coming up there.
Yeah.
So it's interesting because they're trying to, tell you something with each individual character, which I think, no surprise, marketing is getting better and better. Although, Cam, if I buy one shower curtain on Amazon and then I suddenly get nothing but shower curtain advertisements for the next 6 months,
right?
I don't need more than one shower curtain, just saying, yeah. Amazon. I don't know how smart you are really with your marketing. But so if I recall correctly, Rios, he got an advertisement. Was it the Red Bullion was about ship repair?
Yes.
And then we had Feely's Venom Garden that was being directed towards one Raffi. And she, you could tell she was quite embarrassed. And that was coming up there.
Yep.
And then I guess when Agnes wants to enact robot violence. And
Was it robot boxing? Or yeah. What was it?
It was robot boxing.
Okay.
So that was interesting. Did you notice what Picard got?
I didn't. Wasn't there one that was like really brief?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was, it looked like kind of a French maid in a hotel and was like advertising like, come stay at this hotel. It sounded as if it was like maybe more of a body house or something. So,
okay.
Patrick Stewart was always saying that Picard needs to get a little bit more action.
He did.
If you know what I mean. So, I just thought that was a cute little nod. And then Elnor, they got no marketing for that kid at this point.
So. Right. And why do you think that was?
I just think that they've got, he's coming from like a nunnery.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think there's really anything to market to him, unless it's like a sewing kit to reattach heads that he is decapitated. Yeah.
So. I thought that was a fun concept for a humorous sequence, but I don't know that it quite worked for me. Like, it just, it was missing something.
I liked it.
I admired what it was going for. It was visually interesting, but like, I felt like the Elnor moment was like a real punchline. And I didn't think it really worked as a punchline.
Okay.
Because there was just too much chaos going around.
Okay.
But I did think it was interesting,
yeah,
for sure. And I liked that it was presenting something different than we've ever seen before on Star Trek. So I'll always take moments like that.
One of the things that I did appreciate, though, is, Agnes rewatching that video, and she was talking about the replicated eggs, the replicated chocolate chips, and then the concept of putting it all together and baking it. Like, why not just get, like, a replicated cookie? I kind of like the idea of the replicators sucking. Like,
sure.
That's why you don't really want to eat replicated food. Like, some people, there's some people that'll eat anything. They don't really think about it. Other people were like, they're like, oh, no, it's not the authentic sashimi that I'm so. Actually, sure. I don't know who would eat inauthentic sashimi. That would be quite disgusting. But that's why, it's great we had characters like Ben Sisko, who's like, no, you got to do it like the real way. This is like how food should be made. And I like the idea of the replicators kind of sucking. And that's why a lot of people would prefer, kind of the old fashioned baking.
Isn't that kind of just a Star Trek trope, though, that all of these characters we follow are just like, no, it's about the old style way of doing things.
There is a bizarre infatuation with the past for a franchise that's all about looking at how progressive the future is.
Yeah.
It's this weird mix of nostalgia and forward thinking.
It's always kind of odd, too, because you have characters being nostalgic about an era that, like, was so far in the past for them.
Yeah.
Like, I totally understand when I hear, say, someone who's like in their late 40s, early 50s now, saying something nostalgic about the 80s. I totally get it. Like, that's kind of your era of when you were like a teenager in your early 20s. But if they were like nostalgic about, like, I don't know, 1600s, I'd be like, okay, I guess. Like, unless they're like a historian.
I travel a lot, and I'm always just mesmerized when I go and visit like historic sites and all that. And there are people that are just infatuated with, say, the Renaissance or the Elizabethan era.
That's true. I guess there are all the Ren fairs and things like that.
Yeah,
it's more about, I guess
it's why you're dressed right now. So, you know, I guess Megmarian hats that you're wearing. I was wondering,
banging on the ceiling.
Yeah.
But I guess, I mean, more so like the way that all the Star Trek characters work into their daily life. That's what I mean, more so than being interested in the past.
It's a little much. You know? Although we work Star Trek into our daily life, so who are we to judge? I don't know.
That's true enough. Yeah. Okay, so I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Jump on over to the Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod. We will, of course, have the latest video up commenting on the latest episode of Star Trek Picard as well.
Yeah, Cam, looking forward to next week. We've got a guest scheduled up, and I think it's time for Picard to get out of neutral, get into, let's go all the way to fifth gear.
Ooh, yeah. Does he dare? We shall find out. Okay,
I should have said seventh gear.
Oh yeah, why didn't you?
Seventh of nine gears.
Well, you should have said that for this episode. Okay, you can, of course, find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam, V as in Vigilante Ranger, Smith.
You can find me at Reportin, that's Reporton, N as in Notorious 99 or 11.
Okay, so until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.